Let's pray.
Thank you, Lord, for your word. We ask that you would speak to us this morning through your word and through Brother Daniel. I ask that you would just empower him with your Holy Spirit and direct him as he brings to us what you've given him. We thank you so much. In the name of Jesus, amen.
Good morning. In this church and in many of our families, we have a rich tradition. And like many traditions, some of them are great. Some of them are kind of bad. In my family, Jess's dad, we have this tradition. And I noticed we were visiting with Heather's dad the other day. He also has this tradition shown. And there's a member of our congregation that many of you don't know who's no longer with us, Simon Byler. He had this tradition as well. Does anybody know what this tradition is? It's a tradition of losing their fingers. But more importantly, it's the tradition of not using guards. I grew up in a farming community, and we often would have PTO shavs and other pieces of equipment. And if you notice, older people tend to have less fingers than younger people. And that is a direct result of wearing of more protective stuff. I asked, I forget your father's name, Heather, but I asked him, how did you lose your finger? And he said, well, I was operating a planer or a joiner, and it didn't have a guard on it, and I ran my finger through it. And Jess's father was operating a corn picker, didn't have a guard back then, and lost his thumb. I'm not sure how Simon Byler lost his finger, and I'm sure there's many more people we know who are missing fingers. But usually it's the result of not having a guard. And you might ask, why do I share this story? Well, a lot of what we're going to be talking about comes down to creating some guards. It's not necessarily, shall we say, a salvation issue, but it's the blessing of having some guards in place that keep us from falling down paths that we don't want to go on. And so I want you to think about that as I share this message and look at it through that lens for the most part. We are going to cover some things that are more directly commandments. But these guardrails in place, or even more than guardrails, protections in place to keep us from potentially having scary things happen. And one of the beautiful things about the farming community is, across the board, and probably the woodworking community as well, young people tend to have their fingers, and it's a direct result of we started taking guards and shields and all this stuff very seriously, and for the most part, we all have our fingers. So we can be grateful for that. So hopefully you can view what I'm sharing as that. So today we're going to be looking at what does the Bible say about adorning ourselves. And I want to also address a direct kind of reality that we have, and that is we as an Anabaptist church have a rich heritage of some of those guardrails being in place, some of those shields. But it doesn't mean that we can't stick our fingers in the PTO shaft if we want to. But then to those of you who may not come from that background, hopefully this can be a time for you to understand why we do some things. And I also would invite you not to feel like it is a condemnation or a judgment of maybe what you do, but rather an understanding of why we do what we do. So hopefully we can view it that way rather than it feel negative. what does the Bible say about adorning ourselves? And particularly, we're going to be looking at the use of jewelry. But more than that, it's, I think, costly apparel, things that are flashy and drawing attention to us. The lens that I want to view today's sermon on is going to be around two verses that I tried as I studied this to think about. And that the first one is, I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercy of God, to present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. So that's the first verse, and I think that it's so important to think about this. These are subjects that we need to be thinking about and discussing, and that our goal is to be in every aspect of our lives to be transformed by God, renewing us and sanctifying us. And so the first aspect we're going to just always be thinking about is, are we conforming to the world, or are we being transformed by Christ and the new birth? And then the second verse, and this is a verse that several verses that I just love out of the Sermon on the Mount. And I will be honest, I didn't always love these verses as much as I do now. But God has gradually worked this into my life, and that is, do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. For truly I say to you, until heaven and earth pass away, not an iota, not a dot will pass from the law until all is accomplished. Therefore, whoever relaxes one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same will be called the least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does them and teaches them will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I tell you, unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. And there's a lot in these verses, and we are not looking for a list of do's and don'ts, but when we encounter Jesus, our lives will be radically different than the people around us. And the principle of the law doesn't go away, the rules don't go away necessarily, God's commandments don't change, but how we do them and why we do them become very different, and it exceeds that of the law rather than to take away. So I'm going to try to keep this moving, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on one particular thing. Rather, we're just going to move through now and look at, I have four different areas that I want to just explore, and as we think about this subject, how do we approach it? And the first one is, I am going to look, there are two passages that come to mind in the New Testament, and those are going to be 1 Timothy 2, and we're going to look at verses 8 through 10, really just read them and point out a couple things. And then also 1 Peter 3, verses 3 to 5. And interestingly enough, these are very similar passages that bring out very similar things. I desire that in every place men should pray, lifting holy hands without anger or quarreling. Likewise, also that women should adorn themselves in respectable apparel, with modesty and self-control, not with braided hair and gold or pearls or costly attire, but with what is proper for women who profess godliness with good works. So the first thing I want to just acknowledge is this is in a passage where it's talking about the roles of men and women. And an interesting part of this is it brings out two points. And the first is about men, and that is that we should pray and that we should interact without anger or quarreling. And it's interesting how what praying is communing with God and, you know, engaging. And as a man, prayer is not my first. Maybe it's not for any of us, but it is not my first thing to do. My first thing that I want to do in most situations is to go and go after an issue, go after a problem, engage. I don't tend to step back and pray. That takes the focus off of me and turns the focus onto God. And in many ways, what we're talking about is, where is our focus? Is our focus on directing the focus toward God, or is our focus on ourselves? And Paul calls out in men, we tend to want to, that testosterone, whatever it is, we're going to go after it, and we're going to draw the focus on ourselves. And he's calling it out. He's like, that's not what somebody does who is transformed by the new birth. And he gives us some pointers here. And then he also goes on and says and brings out something with women and is engaging the fact that here, you know, there's a tendency maybe to draw the focus on themselves. And he's instructing us against that, but rather saying, focus on what we are to put on. Focus on modesty. And with that, he calls out two things, and I think this is interesting. Some of this is in the custom of the time, but your wealth was shown by wearing gold. And actually, historically, a long time ago, you may actually have a ring, and when you needed to pay for something or give security, you would give that gold ring, and you would wear it on your person. And then in the time that Paul was living, part of showing wealth was braiding potentially even coins and rings and gold into your hair, and that was a show of wealth. And it was drawing the attention onto who you are or your worth as a person, and putting it on very earthly things. And I will say, as a group, we have tended to not wear jewelry directly relating to these passages. And I think it's a wonderful teaching of, let's not put gold on our personage and draw that onto ourselves. Adorning yourself is to draw attention to something. But rather, we want to draw attention to God. And there's these other things that we can do to do that. And that is with modesty and self-control. And really, for the men too, I think culturally it wasn't quite as common for the men to have braid gold coins into their hair. And Paul was not, it's not necessarily something that as men we should say, well, let's all wear, you know, gold rings and all this stuff. It's, and so we can't necessarily say we're exempt from that, but rather Paul is calling this out. And I think this far exceeds gold as either a color or a mineral or element, whatever I guess it is. I think it's more about, are we dressing, are we putting on things that draws attention to ourselves? But I don't think it is amiss to note that God, that gold is, in both of these passages, directly called out. And I think we would be amiss to not pay attention to that and potentially make that adjustment. I realize that I'm sitting here, and I don't know if you all are noticing, but as I was preparing for this, I have a little ring of, it's actually stainless steel, but it is colored gold. And so I was thinking about what, you know, does that matter? How engaged should we be on this? And it was also fascinating just all of the workarounds that people have found over the years to get around gold, wearing gold, and then finding more expensive things to use to adorn themselves rather than gold. So God is calling us, let's not be focused as much on the actual, you know, gold, but are we focusing on trying to adorn ourselves? But I think we should not forget about or not take for granted the use of gold. And then moving on, I don't think we can skip over the fact that there are commandments in the Old Testament about different things. One of the other things that comes up when you think of adorning yourself is the question of tattoos. And again, just the idea of, are we putting on the things of this world or are we putting on the things of God? And that was a concern in the Old Testament. And in the making of the law, they're commanded, don't do the things that, you know, the world around you is doing, the heathen pagan nations. And in the Old Testament, in the same few verses where he commands the people, don't sell your daughters as prostitutes, he goes on and says, you are the sons of the Lord your God. You shall not cut yourself or make baldness on your forehead for the dead, for you are the people holy to the Lord your God, and the Lord has chosen you to be a people for his treasured possessions out of all the people who are on the faces of the earth. And just, you know, just a reminder, this is not a new concept, but God was calling his people to be separate from the beginning, not to put on the things of this world, but rather, and there's other verses that talk about this. And then also just a reminder, in the bottom part of this verse, it says, for you are a holy, or the second verse, for you are a people holy to the Lord your God, and the Lord has chosen you to be his a people for his treasured possession out of all the people who are the face of the earth. And then this parallels themes that we see in the New Testament. Corinthians brings out this idea of we are, our bodies are the tabernacle of God. It's set in 1 Corinthians 3:16 and 17. Do you not know that you are God's temple and that God's Spirit dwells in you? If anyone destroys God's temple, God will destroy him. For God's temple is holy and you are that temple. And just really thinking about, you know, when we're thinking about taking care of our bodies, you know, I think that has to do with, you know, are we caring for ourselves just in, you know, physically, I don't know, brushing our teeth, that kind of stuff. Like, let's, you know, let's care for the body. But also, you know, when we think about in society around us, we see lots of things where people are, you know, marring their bodies because they're not satisfied with what God gave them. And this is a reminder, this body that we were given is the temple of God, and God created it, and we should not destroy that body. And then just continuing with just that reminder, Leviticus 19:28, you shall not make any cuts on your body for the dead or tattoo yourself, I am the Lord. So a reminder of, you know, just as we think about what does the Bible say about these things. And society around us, is not the norm for them. Tattoos have gotten very, very normal. I see, you know, I remember as a little child, my one aunt got her her name, her son's name tattooed on her leg and her name tattooed on her son's leg. And I remember as a child just thinking, you know, people in my circles didn't get tattoos. And now it feels like everywhere you look, tattoos are just more and more common. And again, we don't want to condemn or say that's necessarily someone's not a Christian, but it is, I think, something that there is direct teaching in the Bible that warns against it. And we need to think about it. And are we, you know, are we presenting our body as a living sacrifice to Christ? So the third thing that I want to just, you know, question or thought with this is there's numerous stories in the Bible about people, you know, putting on jewelry, wearing rings, all of these different things. And, you know, the wedding ring often comes up. And as a group, we don't practice the use of a wedding ring. And I know there's lots of different feelings on this. There are people who would take the stance of, you know, wearing a ring that's not made of gold because of that. And I understand that, but I also think I'm very supportive of the approach that as a congregation, we've decided to just put that PTO shield on. We've put the, you know, and agreed we're just not going to participate in that. And we'll get into it a little bit later, but there's a lot of history behind the wedding ring that is really stems as closely as, and there's a lot of stories behind it, but as closely as you can see to a lot of pagan traditions. And again, is that what we want to found our commitment to each other on, or would we rather found them on things like putting on modesty, putting on these, you know, things that are of Christ? So two stories in the one in the New Testament, one in the Old Testament, that are often used in support of wearing jewelry. And the first is the story of Joseph wearing, being given a ring. And I'm just going to read this story, and I'm just have a brief comment about it, just kind of to help understand, maybe if you're thinking about that question and are like, well, what about this? My take on it. This proposal pleased Pharaoh. So again, we all know the story. Joseph has had this proposal to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh was like, okay, let's go on. And then he wants Joseph to take over the project of, you know, preparing for famine. And so this proposal pleased Pharaoh and all his servants. And Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find a man like this in whom the Spirit of God, or in whom is the Spirit of God? Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has shown you all of this, there is none so discerning and wise as you. You shall be over my house, and all of my people shall order themselves as you command. Only as regards the throne will I be greater than you. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, see, I have set you over all the lands of Egypt. Then Pharaoh took out his signet ring from his hand and put it on Joseph's hand and clothed him in garments of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck, and he made him ride in his second chariot, and they called out before him, bow the knee. Thus he was set over all the land of Egypt. Moreover, Pharaoh said to Joseph, I am the Pharaoh, and without your consent, no one shall lift up hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. And so, again, we're not really getting into the story here, but this often is an account where people will say, well, look, you know, Joseph did this. He was wearing a gold chain. He was winning here, all this stuff. And Joseph did not seek out this. He did not ask for, look at me. Rather, he was given it, and the ring that is put on his finger is not as much about honoring Joseph as giving him the authority and a signet ring is saying, you have the power of me. So rather than Pharaoh necessarily, you know, dressing him up to in finery, it was more about the ring itself was more about almost like a badge, or, you know, he was able to come in and say, I have the authority. And the second part that I will say about this story is that there's lots of stories in the Old Testament where it is a story. It is not, you know, endorsing a behavior. It's telling the events. And so we have to be careful. Moses did many things that we don't want to do. Noah did some things that we don't want to do. And so we can't take a story that's told in the Bible and say, well, that person did it, I should do the same. I think we just all know that's very faulty logic. And then moving on into a second story, we have the story of the parable that Jesus told. And again, I'm not going to tell the whole story, but at the end, the son comes home, and the father's response to him is, the son comes and says, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, bring quickly the best robes and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet, and bring the fattened calf to kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this is my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to celebrate. And again, this is often used as a reason. Well, Jesus said, you know, if we want to honor somebody, we put a ring on his finger, and Jesus was using examples that everybody connected with in the day and the practice around him. And it was a practice, if you were honoring somebody, you would give them your wealth. And it was and using that, put a ring on his finger, is him saying, I'm giving you back what you lost. I'm giving you my wealth. And whether that was, you know, that signet ring, that idea of a ring that was a seal, that, you know, now he has the power and authority of his father, I'm not sure. But it is not necessarily saying, let's go wear rings. It's using it as an example. And the example and the point of the story is the son was lost, he came home, and the father embraced him and took him back in. So the fourth point that we're going to look at, and I'm running out of time faster than I thought, is a brief history. And as we look at the history of Christians who took like a historical context and really thinking about Christians that believed we are going to radically change and be radical Christians, and Christ comes in and changes every aspect of our lives. And I would hope that we all who are sitting here have that desire and want to live our lives in such a way that we are radically different than the world around us because what Christ has done to us. And we have a tradition around that through the ages, the focus, when you have these small groups of people who have that approach toward Christianity, that rather than the masses around, you know, who don't, that there's a focus on modesty and not adorning ourselves, rather than a focus on adorning ourselves. And there's also tends to be a broader group that takes that on. And today we see, you know, TV evangelists who have you know, $1,000 Rolexes and airplanes, they're adorning themselves. It's not modest. And interestingly enough, there's an Instagram account that takes pictures of prominent pastors and how they're dressed, and then puts them side by side with the expense of all of their clothing and ranks them. And this Instagram account has thousands and thousands of followers. And the point is calling out the hypocrisy among these preachers. And the world around us knows. They know that that is not of God. And I just wanted to read an interesting quote from John Henry Newman. And he's talking about, as we think about history, he's talking about the taking on of worldly traditions and incorporating them in the church. And he says, Constantine, and if we remember our history, Constantine was the ruler who became a Christian and then demanded that the world around him that he ruled would become Christian as well, and is one of the people who kind of drove Christianity to, in a kind of broad sense, to be the prominent religion of the world. But it says, Constantine, in order to recommend a new religion, Christianity, to the heathen, transferred to it the outward ornaments that they, the heathen, had been accustomed to in their own. But the use of, and then I'm cutting in here, but the use of temples dedicated to particular saints, and that of candles, incense, holy water, processions, and the ring in marriage is a direct result of this, of Constantine trying to get the heathen to assimilate into Christianity. So we see Constantine, who did many good things and had a lot of good about him, he took that of the world and made it part of the church. And unfortunately, we see today that we've let the world dictate what we do. And we struggle with this in many areas of our lives, not just in jewelry. And I want to contrast that to, and we talked about Christians through the ages who believed in the new birth and radically changing every part of their lives. From the early church to Anabaptist, and even more modern teachers like John Wesley, all have teachings about eschewing, you know, things that adorn themselves. John Wesley writes, "The question is, what harm does it to adorn ourselves with gold or pearls or costly array? Suppose you can afford it. That is, suppose it does not hurt or impoverish your family. The first harm it does is it engenders pride, and where it is already increases it. Whoever narrowly observes what passes in his own heart will easily discern it. Nothing is more natural than to think ourselves better because we are dressed in better clothes, and it is scarce possible for a man to wear costly apparel without, in some measure, valuing himself upon it. One of the old heathens so well apprised of this, that when he had a spite to a poor man and had a mind to turn his head, he made him a present of a suit of fine clothing." Sorry, some of that old English gets me. But you get the gist here. He's directly teaching this very idea. And so I think it is important. We can't base our lives on history, but we can turn to history and look and see some of the pitfalls that have come up. So, as we think about this, we ask, what is the role in the local body, in our congregation, to help us work through some of these questions? And again, for the sake of time, I'm not going to get into the why behind this, but I do believe, and I think this congregation believes, that the local body has the God-ordained and entrusted right and responsibility to help the local members with some guidelines. Putting those PTO shafts, covers over the PTO shafts. And that's where I'm greatly appreciative of this body and our take on giving some guidelines to how we are going to practice, these questions. But I also want to acknowledge that as Anabaptists, we can't rely on these, dare we say, rules that we have put in place, because adorning ourselves can hit us in so many different ways than just putting on a necklace or a ring or a gold chain. It can be the car we drive, the house we built. I'm building a house right now, and it's a question I have to ask. Am I building this house because it's what I need, or is it a statement to the community, the neighborhood, about what I have and who I am? And by God's grace, we'll figure that out. We're working through it. Those aren't easy questions to ask. The vacations we take, and then maybe a little bit harder, when we go on vacations, are we enjoying our time with family, or are we on our phones taking pictures to share with everybody to say, look at me, look at what I'm doing? Again, not picking on Instagram, but I do think we have so many things in our lives that are about look at me and look at what the external things I'm doing. One example of this that always makes me chuckle. I have a lot of young people who work for me, and I'm personally not aware, but there's a brand called Chrome, and Chrome Hearts, I think is the name of it. And they pointed out to me, and I'm like, well, what's the big deal? And I start seeing all these people with it on, and it's sweat jackets, and it'll have like a little logo Chrome Heart on it that's supposedly made out of silver. Well, they're like, well, you don't understand. That's something. And I'm like, okay. And so I was like, well, what do you mean? And they're like, well, that jacket costs $2,500. And it is just a sweat jacket. And so, they say that to me, and I start to notice all the people wearing it. And the other day, somebody came up, and they had their Chrome Heart sweat jacket on, and I noticed it. They got a couple ice cream cones. They went to pay, and their credit card bounced. And I had to chuckle, because you want to talk about adorning yourself very external to the point that you can't pay for an ice cream cone. So focused on what do people think about me. But are we any different? Do we, in our modest brags, do the same thing? And my challenge to us is twofold. One is, I want to read that verse that I started out with. I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercy of God, to present your body as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, that is good and acceptable and perfect. So these are not easy questions. And it's going to take work to change our lives. We have to be willing to have discussions. God gives us in the Bible some very clear but general guidelines. And I would take the stance that those guidelines are, let's not tattoo our bodies, stay away from very costly apparel, and he also calls out gold. Exactly what that means, there's some interpretation to. But that other than that, we're going to have discussions about how do we live a modest lifestyle? How do we engage in such a way that it points us toward our Father and in heaven, and it shows a radically transformed life? And I want to just leave you with this somewhat sobering reminder that is also kind of humorous. In that day, man, this is out of Isaiah, in that day, mankind will cast away their idols of silver and their idols of gold, which they made for themselves to worship, to the moles and the bats. Those things of gold and silver that we have, that we hold so much value to, whether they be jewelry, rings, whether they be cars or houses, we're going to, in that final day, cast them away and let the rats and the bats and the moles run through them. That's going to be the value of them in comparison to our life and our relationship with Jesus Christ.